www.stonybrook.org.
And it's just about 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, and over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday night. That means it's time for Off the Wall. To everybody, the program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, I'm right over here.
Welcome back.
I feel welcome back.
Wait, why am I welcoming you back? I was away too. We were both away.
It feels good to be here in the studios.
Well, it does feel good to be back, I'll say that.
Yeah.
It felt good to be away too. I mean, no aspersions cast or anything like that. It felt good to get out on the road and do something different.
Yeah, traveling and also just capturing some of the magic and the cool stories along the way.
It was
for
so,
everyone here.
It was so magical. It really was. It was, whenever we go somewhere, it's always on our own terms. It's always unique. It's always something that can never be duplicated. And what we did was we flew out to Seattle, and then from there we took a train to Vancouver, and then we flew up to Whitehorse on Air North, which I'd never heard of before. And then from there, we drove an RV into Alaska, into the depths of Alaska. You would have heard the last three shows, our three-part documentary on that, the 135-mile race with our friend.
I believe it's the interior.
Yeah, the interior, sure. And then we drove back to Whitehorse from Alaska. We kind of hobbled back because, boy, that that RV gave us some trouble. But you guys actually changed the spark plugs in Toke, Alaska, which was pretty amazing.
We did as much as we could, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about that. Well, actually, no, we haven't talked. We did talk about that. That hasn't aired yet. We have a whole Alaska show that will recap Alaska so that we don't trouble you with it right now. But then after that, we drove back into Whitehorse, spent some time there, then took this amazing little train called the White Pass and Yukon Rail. That's kind of like a tourist train. A lot of cruise people come from Alaska and go into Yukon, which is where Whitehorse is. And the train is somewhat near Whitehorse, not quite at Whitehorse. You take this narrow gauge railway through the mountains. I did not know how scary it was. It was really, really scary. And that led us into a place called Skagway, Alaska, which is another weird town. So many weird towns in Alaska. I cannot even begin to list them all. But Skagway is an amazing place. It's got this kind of Old West feel to it. And it's a really cool town. We went there one night and we were just kind of hanging out, you know, going to different bars and things like that, and felt kind of, you know, part of the local scene. The next day, it was filled with all these people who had gotten off a cruise ship that just happened to dock overnight. So the whole town was transformed. And that's kind of what happens in Alaska and various coastal communities.
Tourism, especially in this mid-tourist summertime regional tourism is critical. I mean, mm-hmm. They're just packed with people visiting, people who have planned for months to take a little break, and here we were amongst them doing our own sort of self-directed historic mm-hmm. tour. It was packed full of information about what the gold rush was, and all of that was fascinating.
A lot of people looking for gold back then and now, but they're not finding it. There's not that much, so don't waste your time.
And the stories are really interesting, and I think instructive to some of the things we rush to.
It really today. Yeah, it's something different. They still have that old time flavor in these various places. Well, after Skagway, we got on what they call the Marine Highway, which is a ferry a network that they have throughout Alaska. You can actually take a ferry all the way from a coastal place in Alaska down to Bellingham, Washington, if you feel like spending several days on a ferry and paying a fortune. We didn't. We decided to go from Skagway to Juneau, which is about 6 hours, and had a great time in Juneau, the capital of Alaska, which you cannot get to by car or by train. You can only get there by boat or by plane. That's it. So I had to see the place, and it was fascinating. We talk more about it in a future show.
We learned so much about Alaska between what we were doing on the Denali Highway and this visit to the capital itself.
Yeah, and you know, I really recommend Juneau for anybody looking for an interesting place to go. It's just a fascinating town. It's fairly big, and it's just so many cool places. Yeah, and again, there's a lot of cruise people who will suddenly descend upon the place when a cruise ship docks. That's kind of weird, but you deal with it. You deal with it. You find the local things, and you enjoy those.
Yeah, and it gives people insight into those areas at the very least, and supports it with economic activity. However you want to make a critique about that many people, especially after a pandemic, who knows what confluence of things are going on there. But it's important to observe, and frankly, just mix it up with people who you would never maybe ordinarily be walking around. You know, you're going to get a sense of one another and mm-hmm. be in the same space, occupy it. And I didn't hear anybody being belligerent. Everyone was incredibly enthused, I think, to be traveling. And I think it was a very pleasant time, which is a little counterintuitive. You'd think mm-hmm. sometimes in big crowds like that, it would be confrontational. But I liked seeing so much of the world out and about and sharing the same space and just taking it in. The weather was really complimentary as well.
Yeah, it went much better than what we've been experiencing around here, I understand.
Although it for the area, I believe, it was a heat wave.
It was a heat wave in the 70s, and, you know, you felt it. But what you say is right. People put aside the differences and just share the experience. And, you know, a lot of times that's the most important thing, because once you do that, then you're able to deal with other things because you already respect each other. You've already been through something together. So, yeah, I find that's really amazing. We've discovered this when we travel cross country and other methods, just being around people and sharing the local experiences in their towns. That is first and foremost the most important thing. And then you take it from there. So, yeah, you know, as far as Juneau, I'm just sum it up with one thing for anybody who goes to Juneau. Just do this. All right. Find the dumplings. Do that. You'll be happy. Just write that down. Trust me. Trust me. Go there. Ask anybody where are the dumplings. They'll tell you. They will tell you. And you will be happy. All right. Good. We understand each other? Okay. I'm not going to say more.
Yeah, we can't.
No.
We're bound.
No. Find the dumplings. That's all you got to do.
Yeah, I'll take care of you.
And the giant crab legs, too. Okay, they're interesting. The king crab. There's a place that has king crab. I'd never had that before. That was wacky.
Well, of course, fishing is a big deal in the area.
Why is it so damn expensive, though?
A lot of seafood. Well, they pride themselves on making sure your
you're paying for their house.
Depth of reverence is as deep as the sea itself.
I just couldn't believe that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a king crab. I didn't expect a king bill. You know, it's fine. I just figure the king crabs are around, so it would be a little bit cheaper. But you could probably get a better deal, you know, downtown. I don't know. I don't want to complain. But it was interesting. Something you got to do once if you feel like it. You don't have to do it if you don't feel like it. Okay, so after Juneau, we flew from Juneau back to Seattle. It's only a two-hour flight. Do you know that? From Juneau to Seattle, it's only 2 hours. It's really close if you go by plane. It's impossible if you go any other way, pretty much. So that makes it more accessible and definitely worth checking out. Seattle, just spent a little time in Seattle, caught COVID there, and got on the train. Oh, I guess we should mention, yes, we caught COVID somehow.
We were on a lot of public transit that I'm not sure everyone is so well on every mode.
If I'm going to lay out blame, what was it, the 150? Was that the bus or the 160?
I don't know the number, honestly.
The bus with the coughing lady, which bus was that?
It was one of the airport.
She wouldn't stop coughing.
Routes.
She wouldn't cover her mouth. And I was saying to myself, oh, God, if I get COVID from this, I'm going to be mad. I got COVID. I was mad. And I was sick, too. You know, I didn't stop. I didn't stop doing what I was doing, but I started sounding like Tom Waits.
It slowed things down.
I had a cough. I had, you know, a headache. Didn't have a fever. But it was sicker than I've been in a while. In fact, sicker than the first time I caught COVID. But I still kept going. I didn't realize I had COVID till we got back and took a test. So, you know, apologies if I didn't cough on anybody. I always keep my distance. I'm antisocial. So, you know, it kind of works out. And you caught it too, from me, I guess.
I think so.
Yeah.
Somehow or another.
From the coughing lady. That's what that was the origination point. But whatever, you know, it's part and parcel for what you get when you travel. I know. But here's something we weren't counting on when we headed back. We headed back by train. Yeah, that's the final chapter of our trip. We headed back cross country by train, Amtrak. Don't really have a choice. Seattle to Chicago is the first leg of that trip. Now, that was weird because we were there in King Street Station in Seattle, which, you know, it's a great building. I love the building. I love the architecture, but it's like they don't get it. They don't get it themselves. You know, just walking to the building, there's all these doors, okay? I think, what, 8 doors? I'm pulling the first door, locked. Second door, locked. Third, there's a guy in there watching me do this, and he keeps pointing to the next door. It's like, which door is open? Of course, it's the very last one, like the eighth door. And, you know, he opened the door. It's like, yeah, you got to go in this door. It's like, why? Why? First of all, you could have told me that without making me go through all of them, like some kind of lab experiment. All right. And why, if you have doors to a train station, don't you use them? For God's sake. What is your problem? I know the All-Star game was coming and you're worried about God knows what, but having doors open, I think is a good thing. I think that's something that we have proven works in society. Wouldn't you agree, Kyle? Doors are good. I mean, you know, is this something that has to be taught?
Yeah, I don't know what exactly is being protected in the public space that is the train station. And I wholeheartedly support the functionality of doors at all times.
That's all I want to do.
For entryway, uh-huh, access, various exits,
yeah,
egress, all of that, I think, those are really pivotal and important. And look, and for safety reasons, you know,
Seattle, you got a good train station. You have Amtrak coming to your town. Not everybody gets that. You need to actually behave like it's a real thing. Having more than one door that works, and not hiring a guy to just stand there to tell you that all the other doors don't work and go through this one after you've already gone through that one. And he's also there to tell you to go out that door too, because I went out the door because I got bored and wanted to find something. Okay, other complaint? There's nothing in King Street Station. I wanted to get cough drops. That's because I was sick. I wanted cough drops. And there's no place in the entire station to buy a damn cough drop or newspaper or anything. It's a train station. People will want to buy things. Okay, so you know what? I walked out the door, the right door, down the street. I couldn't find anything on the street. You know what we found? You know what we found? We found an oyster bar. There was an oyster bar. And that was pretty much it. Couldn't find a coffee shop. Couldn't find a bodega. Well, they don't have those out there. But, you know, a store that sells things the bodegas sell. You know, groceries, things like that. It's a city, for God's sake. Seattle, are you a city? Come on, act like a city. So within two blocks of the train station, couldn't find anything like that. But found the oyster bar. And you had these weird things that were just existing and were being patronized by rich people, I guess, but not things that, you know, people who are in a train station might need. And then it started to get fun because, you know, our train was supposed to leave at a certain time, and that time was coming and there was no train. And the announcement board kept saying the train was on time. And then it said the train is boarding. The train wasn't there, but it said it was boarding. There was even an announcement at the bottom. You know, we could type in something saying special notes and things like that, saying that the train was in fact there and was in fact boarding, et cetera, et cetera. So then this guy gets up, an Amtrak employee, I assume, and starts shouting at everybody, supposedly the exact directions as to what's really going on, because the board was wrong, and I think most of us realized that at that time there was no train that was boarding. Except here's the thing, you know, it's a big echoey train hall, and you have this guy without a PA system just shouting. You couldn't understand anything he was saying. He just was reverberating from left to right and back again.
It was not an improvement.
It was ridiculous. And what I didn't understand was, you're in a train station. I'm going to keep coming back to this because apparently Seattle doesn't get train stations. You're in a train station. There is a working PA system there. Okay. There should be. There is an announcement board and there's a place for notes for the announcements. And you apparently, the Amtrak employee, had no control over any of that because we witnessed our train boarding. We even saw our train departing on the board, and it was gone. It just was wiped off the board as if it had actually appeared and gone away. It was very surreal to see your own train disappear when you're not on it. It's kind of like, you know, Tom Sawyer's funeral or whatever. Was it Huck Finn? I don't know. But the point is, it shouldn't have happened that way. And this guy kept getting up occasionally and mouthing all kinds of other things. And it was like listening to the parents in the Peanuts comic strip, you know, wah, wah, wah. I couldn't understand anything it was saying.
You know, I totally agree. Is this functional? Is this a user-friendly facility? Are they even, do they even understand they're like a Western, big city? And this is what greets people. There's no supplemental information boards or smaller speakers so that it doesn't have that quite the effect.
I don't get it.
They don't have anything more than two vending machines. I think there's two vending machines.
Oh yeah, the vending machines.
Snacks.
That didn't do it for me. I'm sorry.
It is pitiful.
Look.
And if somehow the surreal part for me is that I, on some level, was not expecting much more.
Well, that's the thing. That, you like, should expect more.
In this flagship, big, historic train station, and I'm not getting this experience, like a modern experience. It feels completely regressive.
First of all, you know, Seattle, you have to be a bit more assertive. You have to demand things, all right? And you should demand an actual train station that works. And that means being able to use the announcement board if you're the person that works there and has to announce something, not having to shout in a hallway where nobody can understand you. And you know, another thing, I can just list off my pet peeves, they have the same amount of buses going there as trains. And that shouldn't be, because the buses go to the same places as the trains. There's a bus to Vancouver, but there's also a train to Vancouver. Why not have two trains that go to Vancouver instead of a bus? Especially when the bus, and you can check this out too, if you see the bus pull up and it's the official Amtrak bus, it says on the front, next time take the train. It says that on the bus. It's scolding you for taking it. So, I think they're aware of their shortcomings, but they haven't quite gotten to the point of fixing those shortcomings. Anyway, so our train is gone, according to the board, not according to the shouting guy, who, you know, we assume works there, but we're not sure entirely. Nobody knows what's going on. The track that our train was supposed to be on, or claimed it had been on, is now about to be occupied by another train going someplace else. So now all these people are lining up there. The guy is shouting at them now. I don't know what he's saying to them, but their train actually gets there, and all these people are going out to that train happily, and we're still there, and we have no idea what's happening. You know, I had to go online and look it up there to find out how late it was. So that was the only indication I got that it was in fact going to show up at a future time. And then on this other track that nobody was watching, I saw an Amtrak train just pull up, and I knew from the cars that this was not the what's that train called that goes to Portland. Pacific Coast
Cascades.
Starlight or Cascades. Yeah. Cascades has certain kinds of cars, and this train did not. So I basically said to everybody around, that's our train. That's our train. About 10 minutes before Amtrak people figured out it was the train, it was obviously going to be our train. There were no other trains scheduled. It was going, it had pulled in the right direction. It was on the track that wasn't assigned for anything else. So yeah. Okay. That's too bad. Amtrak couldn't figure that out themselves. So, and of course the door that goes, that went to that track was locked. We were locked in. So it took another 20 minutes to figure all that out. We finally got on the train, and somehow over the course of the next 2 days, which is the period we were on that train caught up. It was 2 hours behind, and it caught up and was actually a little bit early in Chicago. So that was amazing. That was amazing. And we were ready for the next leg of our trip, Chicago to New York, by train. And that's where the problems started. Because we got text messages saying that there was some kind of a disruption and that our train would be terminating in Albany instead of New York City. We didn't really know what that was about. But we did get an announcement from another shouting guy in Chicago. Yeah, this guy was in what's known as the Metropolitan Lounge. That's where sleeper passengers get to hang out before their train arrives. So we were in that lounge, getting the text messages saying that there was going to be a problem. And then this guy starts shouting at everybody saying that the announcement that you may have seen is wrong, that the train to New York is in fact on schedule and will go all the way to New York. It's the train to Boston where there's a problem. What happens is in Albany, the train splits in two. Half of it goes to Boston, half of it goes to New York City. So this guy convinced everybody to get on the train and go to New York City, and there won't be any problems. Except we found out the next day when we all got text messages saying that our train had been canceled. The train that we were currently on had been canceled, and that this train would not be going to New York City after all. And to make things even better, they weren't going to do anything for us as far as getting us to New York City. But getting to New York City is your responsibility, they told us. I could not believe it. I've never seen anything like this, where you basically, through no fault of your own, wind up stranded someplace, and the people that got you there just shirk off all responsibility and say that, yeah, nothing we can do, sorry. And, you know, I had some suggestions. I said, you know, we could just get on the Boston train and simply either switch at Springfield, Massachusetts, and head down through Connecticut and get to New York City that way, or go all the way to Boston and take another Amtrak train back to New York City. That would get us there. In fact, that's how rail networks work. You route around the problems. They did not understand that. The representatives I talked to did not get that. They said, no, you can't, because that's a different train. That train's going to, I know that train's going to a different place. That's the point. You can't go down to New York City because of flooding on the tracks. That was the reason. So why don't you use your trains to get around and take care of all these people who are now stranded in the train station? And they just didn't get it. So that's how we got stranded in Albany.
And the alternative, I mean, all the stops leading up that had any kind of other alternative ground service were like suggested en route. And then when we were there, we were basically told we could find accommodations indefinitely or otherwise coordinate ground transportation. And there really wasn't anything as far as rental cars was an option that people were pursuing.
Well, no, actually, I thought of that myself. I thought it'd be cool to rent a car and return it down here. You know, a one-way return where you rent it in one place, you return it in another. Nobody was offering that. Not a single company was offering that service. I could rent a car and bring it back, but that wouldn't get me anywhere. I'd be right back where I started. Buses, they said, yeah, you can take a bus. Yeah, you could take a bus, except that there were no buses. All the buses were sold out. So what are you going to do for us now? Well, not our responsibility. Can't do anything. While we were getting to Albany, the people on the PA would say, yeah, there's an airport here. You know, in case you want to get off the train and charter a plane, you could do that. They had no conception of the kinds of people who ride Amtrak.
Oh, they were laughing.
Oh, I mean, it was terrible.
It was
no, just... they weren't. I mean, the people on the train, I love Amtrak people. They were screwed too. They had no idea how they were getting home. Nobody was telling them anything. This was management. This was all management making these decisions, saying, no, you can't take the Boston train. No, we're not going to do anything for you. You know, just, I don't know what happened. It was the most unpleasant experience I think I've ever had on Amtrak. It soured both of us to taking trains. And you know how much we love trains.
And in any situation, we would suggest it or bring it up. We've lauded it so many times before. And in all of my train travels, I've never been given the option to just stop short during your trip and not have any kind of recourse. And the kind of options they were giving you were like, yeah, that's an option, but that's not realistic. Like, oh yeah, you can get a hotel and wait for a train, but we don't have a schedule. Like, we don't have any estimation of when there will be other trains for that route.
Yeah.
So stay somewhere indefinitely at your own expense. Like, none of that actually completes the trip, which is what we needed. And they had said things like, well, buses were rented, or they're suggesting buses, but what really was the case is that like two had been reserved the day prior when it was like an immediate emergency, but they didn't follow up with anything to supplement what was like a cascading effect of cancellations.
You know, I get weather, I get all kinds of unexpected things that happen, but you don't abandon people that you're in charge of. You just don't do that. And that is what happened and should not have happened that way. It should have felt like, you know, we don't know the answer right now, but we're going to make sure something is taken care of. And that did not exist. I can't imagine that with airlines. People would be, you know, going insane. And that's the thing. The passengers were so polite. The passengers were, you know, I really think I should get a refund here. Sir, you can't argue about the weather. The weather's not our fault. That's not what the person was doing. The person simply was saying, here I am in a city that I have no connection to. And you're telling me there's no way out. I think I should get some kind of compensation for that. They actually said, because you got on the train, that means that you can't get a refund. And the reason people got on the train was because that guy in Chicago told everybody to get on the train. I don't know. It's just really a bad thing for Amtrak to do.
Yeah, if that had been an accurate announcement early enough, people could have made changes to their tickets to go to other cities and take advantage of routes that were not flooded.
Yeah,
you could have routed in so many directions from Chicago that may have taken us an extra day, but it would have been interesting. It would have been something we could have planned for.
Chicago, you can take the Cardinal. That's a train that goes through Washington, D.C., a totally different route. You know, yeah, we would have done that. But you know, the real crazy thing is that right there in Albany, the train splits in half. So half the train isn't going to New York City anymore. It's just parked there. So even the excuse that, oh, the train to Boston is sold out, you have more cars right there and you are a train. So I know it's possible to link them together and make a slightly longer train. Not at the last minute, but you had a full day to plan this. And they couldn't see past their own bureaucracy. Anyway, how did we get to New York? Well, we wound up doing a lot of internet searching while we were sitting there in the train station for many hours. And I was able to find a bus that, this was a weird bus. It basically, the stop was in front of a Chinese grocery store, and the price was almost too cheap to believe. We got there a few hours before it left, just to be sure, after buying a ticket online and getting really not much of a confirmation, but just one little QR code. We were able to get on this bus. And the thing is, this bus was overbooked because other people tried to get on it. There wasn't room, and it got so impassioned that they had to call the cops. It was this bus out of Albany that all these people wanted to get on. We were already on it, and other people were fighting to get on it. It was biblical. It really was. We wound up getting into New York City around 2 a.m, but it felt great to escape. Not that there's anything wrong with Albany. It's just, you know, when you don't have any plans there and you want to be somewhere else, it just seemed really bad. And I have still yet to work it out with Amtrak if there's anything they're going to do for us, because I can't get through to them on the phone. It takes hours, literally, and I don't have hours. So eventually, one day, hopefully, I'll be able to work this out.
What's
so
even
funny, Kyle? You find this funny?
No, I
had COVID the whole damn time too. So
after so many wrong turns and so much stress and anger, to the surreal like aspect of like stepping off a mode of transportation at 2 a.m. in like basically Times Square and breathing a sigh of relief at the calm and how backwards that is, actually.
Like, that was on 34th Street, actually, but it felt so good to be back.
Well, in the middle of Manhattan, where we had been originally anticipating we'd been arriving much earlier, it was just a frenzy, and then we were able to have so many more options from having so few.
And you had a dentist appointment. You had a dentist appointment the next day somehow that you had planned months ago. And we were able, by using Grand Central Madison, the new LIRR station in New York City, we were able to hop on a train out here, and you made it to your appointment with 5 minutes to spare. That is how you come back. That is a trip. So, yeah, not every bit was amazing and pleasant, and that will happen to you when you travel as well. There'll be unexpected things. There'll be what we call hard landings.
I was spitting mad. I've been seething, and I was just so irate.
Yeah, yeah. And I realized it was all my fault. I realized that. No, you explained it to me. Why? It was all my fault.
That wasn't really the explanation. Uh-huh. I was just summarizing how the explanation would go if you would let me talk.
But, you know, once you get through these rough patches, and you finally get to where you want to be going in the first place.
Imagine that, a rough landing on your way home.
Yeah, yeah, that really was something. So, yeah, it was fun. I was, what, about 4 weeks or so, and we saw quite a bit. We got a lot of good feedback for the shows, the documentary. We didn't plan on doing a three-part show on the Denali 135 race, but it was so interesting, so unique, so wacky, we just had to. And I wanted everybody to experience what we were doing and what Greg was doing. It was simply amazing, running 135 miles in less than 48 hours. That's something I'll never forget. We had a bunch of letters. I'm going to read one. This is from Ian. Hey, guys, pretty cool to hear that you visited the public radio station in Talkeetna, Alaska. Yes, we did that. Talkeetna, another amazing little town in Alaska. This is where the celebration took place after the race. We just couldn't get enough of the place. We were walking all over. Everyone had a log cabin, including the NPR station there. And we just walked in and spent a couple hours there talking to them. It was so amazing to basically find radio stations like that. We did that in Whitehorse as well, to at least three stations.
We made ourselves a polite nuisance to several stations along the way. And then I encourage other people to just reach out if they're in an unfamiliar place. It's a great way to get to know the town and let them know you listen. Let them know that's how you got to know and got familiar on your way in visiting. But it was great to go the extra bit and introduce and find out what's important to them and how they're working.
They told us an interesting story there in the Talkeetna NPR station that they used to air Democracy Now!, which airs before Off the Wall. But there was one conservative person in town that raised a stink about it, and that's why it's no longer on. That's all it takes. So maybe one liberal person can raise a stink now and get it back on the air there. Well, who knows? Anyway, this listener, Ian, says he was a guest DJ on that station for a couple of hours back in 2012. How about that? Well, small world. This was just after Hurricane Sandy, so I played the Bruce Springsteen song on their show, which is called Strictly Vinyl. You know, a lot of stations have vinyl shows these days. We heard a few of them. While listening to old Off the Wall and Off the Hook shows from that time, I noticed that you played the same song. Yes, very observant, Ian. Absolutely. I remember that. I think I played it on both Off the Hook and Off the Wall because, you know, there's a song that Bruce Springsteen put out where the refrain is Sandy. It was right after Superstorm Sandy. It just seemed like the thing to do, and nobody else was doing it except for you out in Alaska. We both played the studio version, even though the live version is far, far superior, and I said as much on the air. Yes, but I'm sure as I experienced and you experienced, we couldn't find that version, and the studio version was right there. It's also the second album of Bruce Springsteen, so, you know, you gotta do a throwback to those you know, special days. It's such a great song. It's worth listening to. Anyway, the naming issue regarding the mountain is actually something I figured you'd have known more about. Yeah, me too. Me too. Sometimes my ignorance surprises me. We're talking about Mount McKinley and Mount Denali. They're the same thing. And I learned that. Greg mentioned it while we were talking in Talkeetna, in fact. Here's a bit of background. President William McKinley never even visited Alaska. You and Greg said basically the names Denali and Mount McKinley are interchangeable, but Denali dominates the local discourse. To be clear, the domination of the original name is 100%. I lived in Alaska for about 7 years and never once heard any local call it McKinley. In fact, people from Alaska joke about that term's use as being one of the surefire ways to tell that someone's a tourist or a very fresh new arrival. What's interesting is I had not heard Mount McKinley mentioned in a long time. So I was kind of wondering where it went. And I just didn't put two and two together that Denali was the same place. But now I'll never forget. Denali is an Athabascan word meaning the high one. During the Obama administration, the name was officially corrected, I believe, by executive order. Now, Trump may have had to change back to the incorrect name because that's the kind of thing he would do. And the current administration may have even corrected it yet again. You'd have to look it up. I'm not sure I want to. I might get depressed. But yeah, a lot of money wasted on that, of course. But not wasted if they're doing it the right way. The name Denali is also used for a huge SUV thing, which is kind of silly considering you can't drive to the mountain. Although I'm sure some idiot will try. Thank you, Ian, for that amazing letter. Is there a Denali SUV? Kyle, you know all the SUVs.
Correct.
Oh, for God's sake. There's a Pacifica SUV. You know, they just basically name it things that should not have SUVs named after them. They don't care.
Those are old models. Maybe they won't be resurrected anew. Or they'll, I don't know, make it something that does the name proud, uh-huh, so to speak. But I don't know.
Wow. Well, we're back, so we might as well talk about some local things. What do you think about this heat?
It's sweltering, and every time there's a forecast, it's like the next 10-day heat wave, and it just seems never-ending. The humidity is there. You're experiencing the swimminess,
yeah,
of the heat and the hot moisture everywhere. You're cranking your air circulation methods, and the studios, the transmitter, everything is chilling.
Mm. Not here, not in this room. We're not doing any of that. We're baking in this room at the moment, but you know, that won't last too much longer. Hopefully. Well, one of us will pass out or the show will end, hopefully.
I heard rumblings, and I do think, the thunderstorms actually, like, do they help with the heat?
They help me. They help me.
It gets heavy, and then it's sort of like a...
It's a distraction. It does cool things down.
It shakes things up. Yeah, because there's more actual rainfall, and maybe like a breezes and other activity that... I think it does have like a cooling effect.
Mm-hmm.
So... I guess we want more thunderstorms?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do. Yeah, I want more storms, period.
I'm set. I'm ready for that.
Yeah.
I have my my all-weather gear.
I don't care for the 120-degree time. Not that we have that here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in New York, it's fairly civilized compared to the rest of the country. My God, what people are going through.
I got plenty of blue tarp, which I learned is incredibly important out on the frontier.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
In Denali, you can do a lot with a blue tarp. And so, yeah, I'm ready for the thunder and lightning.
Can I ask you a question about this particular piece of electronic equipment, which is...
Yeah, you seem to be wiggling
something.
Well,
it's got a flashing... Come look at this.
Just talk to the people. Please, I'll look.
Before it stops doing it. You see that flashing orange? It's doing that rapidly. It's been doing that a couple of times. I don't know what it means. I wouldn't unplug anything because that's an important piece of equipment there. Maybe we look at it later. It was doing that before, then it stopped doing it. So I don't know why. Things are working differently than when we left it. Okay, so speaking of heat, Phoenix has broken a heat record set in 1974. That was today. They reached a miserable milestone. The first time the city had measured 19 days in a row of 110 degree or more temperatures, which broke the record set in 1974. The forecast called for a high of 117 degrees Fahrenheit today. I can't even imagine. And you could say it's dry heat. That doesn't really help that much. It doesn't really help at all.
At that point, yeah, the threshold becomes just exponentially more unbearable, especially if you're in direct sunlight, in places without shade. Absolutely stay hydrated. And prepare yourself for these conditions. Not quite so much here, but if you're in that part of the country, obviously air conditioning has a different meaning and considerations for all kinds of different effects of this level of temperature have to be thought of and taken care of. So it's an incredible moment. Looking at where it is historically and then in these different parts of our country and around the world, just how much the intensity of things has affected day-to-day life and various calamity.
It's not just here. It's throughout the world. You know, several continents are affected by this. And I don't hear much from the climate deniers anymore. You know, I think they finally shut up and
who wants to
realize that, and we have to stop taking them seriously and start just pushing them out of the way, because they are killing us by preventing things from happening that could actually have a positive effect on the climate. By refusing to do that, or by making it harder to do that, they are basically sealing the fate not only of many humans, but life throughout the planet. And we can't let them do that. We have to start getting a little bit nastier.
Well, I like to think that it's it is slow and steady in some ways, but the attention and the clarity, the ability for people to appreciate the patterns and the record and facts itself, I think it makes actions that are not in favor of humanity quite visible and iridescent, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a sort of urgency and impatience that that we do not let business and institutions get away from us.
Mm-hmm.
We're at the effect of all of that, and it's us collectively that we have to like vote and participate and be aware, discuss things.
And you just voted today, didn't you?
Right the ship.
You got another ballot in the mail.
Stormy waters. Yeah, I do vote, and there's
a lot. You vote an awful lot.
Off election, and especially young people need to stay active in off years. I'm not going to tell people what to do beyond that, but the boring elections matter. I don't know. It's all so critical to stay active, to however you live your life, whatever you do, just participate in the thing that that we have going on here, and with clarity. And I understand there's different attitudes, you know, there's all kinds of strategies and things at play, but counting yourself out or discounting the function of our citizen run government, I think really does a disservice to the country. And you can be a part of quelling that and making sure that it continues to operate by paying attention in small elections and all of them. Don't miss one. That's my record.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to miss one.
No. And you didn't, even though we were traveling, you didn't miss anything. But getting back to the heat in Phoenix, I'm reading about people who don't have shelter or access to water and the hell they're going through. Apparently, many people are winding up in emergency rooms after being found incapacitated on the ground, sometimes with secondary burns from the scorching sidewalks. That is the world we are living in right now. We see people passing out from full-blown heat stroke with a core body temperature of 104 degrees. So please look out for people. You know, we were told in Alaska that's something that everybody does because of the harsh conditions there, harsh in the other direction where it gets very cold. It's required that you look out for people that might be stranded on the side of the road. Do the same thing down south or anywhere where these weather conditions might be incapacitating to people.
Absolutely. And I want more engineering of spaces that are refuge, that provide shade, that are livable, however big and or however vague that is. There's all this stuff I think they were doing in the run-up in Seattle for the All-Star game, and they're like putting in certain neighborhoods, private entities were installing these eco blocks, like big cement blocks, and making places unlivable. And we do a lot of that for like pigeons and you know, other pests, but we are treating humans that way too, whether it's these encampments or like people parking in RVs. I mean, we just had a big adventure with an RV. I have a different relationship with RVs now.
Yeah, that was something.
I've seen people living in all kinds of terrible conditions. And in some of our travels back to Seattle, I visited places that I lived in Georgetown, and there were you know, whole generations living in places that had been fenced off, and then it just coming back. Like it's weird. There's sweeps and all of these sort of inhumane band-aids on huge social ills. And I think we should be using what affordable materials we can muster and planning and cooperation to build places that people thrive, actually can survive in, especially in 120 degree heat, you know, shade, all the basics of what you would need to survive, because that's what a civilization like ours deserves. And it's just, it's terrible to see the sort of happenings of so many bad situations affecting people and tipping things mm-hmm. away from what is healthful and what people need and for their well-being and so forth.
You realize how close you are to being in that position when you go through something like getting stranded in Albany by Amtrak, because we were there in a train station and we had no place to go and nobody wanted us to stay where we were. Yeah, that's how it was. They weren't even helping us at all. They were treating us like, you know, we were intruders or something, when literally there was no place to go. Now imagine that as your daily life, where you have to find a way to go to the bathroom. You have to find a way to clean your clothes or just to, you know, to not stink yourself and to somehow get around and do the things you need to do. It gets very hard very fast, and I think many of us don't realize that. So in that sense, you know, thank you, Amtrak, for stranding us in Albany so we could remember that lesson. But none of us are that far away from something like that happening, and maybe sometimes we need to experience that just to get reminded.
And travel, I think, can help remind us of, you know, what we're missing, and that some places do get the attention. It's sometimes it's commercial ventures. I'm thinking of Skagway. They have this like huge park with a brand new public restroom that obviously is something that cruise ship passengers are going to see. Mm-hmm. But it was built around people walking off and masses of people coalescing there at the foot, you know, at the intersection of also the railway yard and known hubs of activity where people are needing services to keep their dignity while in transit.
Right.
And I think there's enormous gaps, and we could go on and on and on and on about just all the different avenues and angles of this itself. 'Cause I think living and being ambulatory are and having space for all of that is essential to life. So it was a real wake up, a real smack in the face, I think.
You know, it's something, it's making me remember how many cool conversations we had just with total strangers, particularly in Juneau. Remember that lady who just walked up to us? We were sitting on a bench. I think this was after going up the mountain and coming back down again in a really terrifying tram. But you have to do it to see an amazing view. We had come down from that. We were sitting on a bench and we were looking at this portrait of this woman, wondering who she was. And as if out of thin air, this woman just came up to us and started talking to us about her. I don't think she could have heard us saying that we didn't know who she was or just expressing an interest. Maybe she saw us looking at that woman. But she mentioned the name Elizabeth Peretrovich as this person that was an icon for getting native rights in Juneau, and just talked to us for about 20 minutes about where we were from, where she was from. And it's really incredible. She basically, it's weird because she kept telling us when she was born, and it's pretty much the same time that Elizabeth Peretrovich died. So maybe she was her reincarnation. I don't know. You have these moments of magic in Alaska. You really do. And just a great conversation that came out of nowhere. And that was just a real honor to have.
It was so, I think, otherworldly just for this break in all of the hubbub and the boardwalk along the pier. Mm-hmm. And she was just in front of us speaking about her life and what this mural meant, and that was exactly how she had come upon it, or she was there based on people recommending her checking it out. So as a local, like, just seeing us there, it was very interesting to be brought into that, and it lent insight to the importance of what she was about, and basically is raising the noise and being outspoken on behalf of what was going on with mining in the area.
Yeah, and I like the fact that she came up to us. We're clearly not cruise passengers. We're all over the place. And just had this heart-to-heart conversation. And it wasn't the only time either. When we were going up on that crazy tram to the mountain, I remember we were talking to a woman who had a face mask on, and the face mask said, "I can't breathe." And I realized that was a George Floyd reference, and we talked about that while we were online. It was really she was a staff person there. And it was just a very sincere type of conversation, and we were, you know, very thankful that she was wearing something like that, and she was happy to talk about it. So, you know, this kind of thing happens everywhere, but somehow in Alaska, it's more at the forefront. You wind up just having better conversations with people. I'm not sure why that is.
Yeah, it brought out a lot of interesting insights, and I don't know. I'm curious about the area, and I don't know. It was unexpected. I think that depth, that kind of being drawn to different bits of the history, and just spending some time, some moments, listening to what it means to people that are from there.
Mm-hmm.
Really, that's a great part. I love that, doing that with photography, really listening for things, as I like to say, to capture. But radio and storytelling are the same. And,
right.
And that was something I'm glad you brought up, that I'll never forget. And so many other moments like that, where we're just observing things, and being there on the 4th was interesting too. We have a lot of,
oh yeah, that's right. We were there on the 4th of July accidentally. We didn't know it was the 4th of July when we were booking our travel arrangements. But yeah, in Juneau, what happens is they light all the fireworks on the 3rd, the night before. And then the 4th is relatively quiet. So that's interesting. Weren't expecting that. And so we got to see all these celebrations. It was really a lot of fun.
And a lot of, like, Americana and, you know, local people hanging out amidst all of these cruise ship passengers. I think they let the cruise ship passengers mix during the celebrations. But no, it was like small town America right there, just celebrating. We walked all over the Capitol,
mm-hmm.
Even up right up to the governor's mansion.
We walked up a big hill. Yeah, the governor's mansion is right there.
It's so cool. You're right there in a really busy, bustling town, and just but slowed down enough. I mean, it was a relaxed mood. There's less people. It feels like that in the Yukon as well.
Mm-hmm.
You're not in as massive a city in a place like Chicago or New York City, but people are people, and there's just so much to take in coming away from that.
So I need to inform you about something, Kyle.
Yeah, what did I do?
Well, Finn is locked outside. He can't get into the studio. And ordinarily, I'd be able to help, except I'm not in the studio either, so I can't really help him get in. But he has been texting me saying that he will let us know when he's inside. I'm not sure if he's inside yet, because I asked him if he's still outside, and he hasn't answered. So either maybe his phone died, maybe he's on his way inside right now. What I'm going to do is read this story, and if I don't hear from him, then I'm going to ask you to call and see if anybody is in the studio, because we have no way of knowing if he's there. We're supposed to be wrapping it up about now. And this is a special show tonight, too, for Finn. It's the Stony Brook Film Festival show. Yeah, it's really... I just got a message saying he's there. So, okay, let me not read this story. It wasn't that interesting anyway. But let me just tell people, yes, the film festival program is a yearly thing that Finn does. Stony Brook Film Festival is an awesome event. If you're anywhere within 1,000 miles, it is worth traveling to. And especially in this day and age of writers and actors being on strike because of greedy studios.
Big studios. Yeah. There's a lot of smaller films and foreign films that are not a part of those bigger studio systems necessarily.
So give those a chance.
So there's probably a lot of reason to go as opposed to not going, and gosh, just support cinema, support theater, and watching this stuff, and great, great storytelling.
Absolutely.
I hope we did our trip a little justice. There's so many more recordings and things that we captured in the next edition of that.
We'll have more to say for sure, and well, more to say about other things as well, because boy, there's a lot of interesting things happening in this world, and we certainly want to cover as much as possible.
All right, I'm not calling Finn.
Write to... no, don't call him. He's in the studio. We know that now. OTW@2600.com is our email address. But speaking of good storytelling, this is one of the themes to a show called Northern Exposure, all about Alaska. And I got to tell you, you know, that show has aged very well. And the stories that they tell, they're pretty close to real life when you actually are out there. So definitely worth catching if you have not in a while. Yes, I know they kind of ruined the music on the American release. If you really want to get the authentic version, what you have to do is get a region-free Blu-ray player or a DVD player and get the German version. I'm not kidding. Get the German full set. It does not have the same copy restrictions. It is worth it. It really is.
You can still find Alaskan brewing products that are heavily placed in that show.
That's right.
I investigated this, and there's lots to do.
This is a piece from David Schwartz, who did the Northern Exposure theme. And, yeah, just one more instance of magic. That's going to do it for us tonight. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned for Finn and learn all about the Stony Brook Film Festival. We'll keep listening ourselves. Good night, everybody.
So long.